Alan Crane Productions, in association with the Emergent Life Studio, present the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, for autumn semester 2025. Today, review for the final exam. And I will go through the review after we look at the numbers for a while. You'll do your course evaluations, and then we'll get started on the review. And it serves to some extent for you to keep an eye on what I'm doing here, because I've been doing it all semester. And I will sort of ask some basic, broad questions about the numbers. And on the final exam, I will give you a screen, but all I'll ask you to do is find holding period return on it. So I'll show you a stock or two, and we'll do that one more time here before I put a pause on the class so you can do those student course evaluations. As you can see, it was a bullish day on the street. It wasn't spectacularly bullish, but it was broad-based. You can see that the Dow was up. That's not too spectacular. It began to lose a little steam at the end there, but it was up 0.86%. Interestingly, the S&P 500 was not up as much. Usually, the S&P 500 would be up more, but today it was up only 0.3%. And the NASDAQ, which should be the best, was the least at 0.17%. So it's a kind of a topsy-turvy day on the street. Across the world, the Hang Seng was down. I'm not sure why that was. It just was really in a bad mood. But the Nikkei did fine. It did lose some momentum there at the end of the day, but it was up. And then Europe was doing okay. Euronext was up. You know, nothing big, a little more than 0.25%. CAC 40. It's interesting because if you look at the Euronext and the CAC 40, their behavior was the same, except that the CAC wasn't quite as exuberant up. But the pattern went up and down the same way, CAC being the 40 stocks on the Paris Exchange, the Paris Bourse. So anyway, it was a day that was decent, and we had a volatility that was easing off through the day, which is good news. Now you go down here, and there's a little bit less of the good news because you have gold. It's certainly not up there near $5,000 an ounce, but it has cleared good distance from $4,000 an ounce. If you remember, at the beginning of the semester, we were way down in the 3,000s. So there is developing concern among certain types of investors who are now moving to the safe harbor of gold. But if you go look around, crude oil still down there in below $60 a barrel, and you're beginning to see gasoline prices reflecting this. I've seen $2.84 a gallon a couple of places in town, so that's good news. Yay for us. However, I've told you the bad side of that, the downside. Now over here, if we look at the 10-year bond, the yield is sliding. It's still above 4%, and we'd love to see it get down below 4% because that lower interest rate there would influence other interest rates to go down, and so that would be stimulative to the economy. In general, we are seeing the government is not giving us numbers right now, and even the numbers it's giving us are highly suspect. But there are private services that are saying, yeah, we are definitely either in the beginning of a recession or we are teetering on the brink of it. Jobs reports terrible, manufacturing index, consumer confidence, they're all in territory that is eerily reminiscent of the Great Recession of 2008. So yeah, there is a lot of concern. So make sure that you get your jobs early and often, or stay here in school and get a second major. Now here's an interesting thing. Stocks are looking good today, except for the one sector that usually is the best. Technology was down for the day, which is a little bit odd, but still you can see that broad-based rally was underway today. A positive sentiment across the board. I want to show you something here. Just one last pass at some kind of a a subsector of the stocks. I showed you one, fast food. I showed you telecommunication, defense, consumer products. Here's one that I hadn't, and I'd be kind of remiss not to at least show it to you. And this is the green energy sector. Now, as a general rule, there is a kind of a negative sentiment about the green energy sector, but at the same time, you can't ignore it. And so, if you want a well-diversified portfolio, it might be worth it to have one or two stocks in the sector in the portfolio. So, I'll show you some. Now, this is interesting because most people don't know about these companies. I'll show you one next, if I can get it. NextEra. NEE. Now, here's one that is definitely, it's a little bit pricey, $84.95 a share. And it is definitely a volatile stock. But interestingly enough, if you look at its beta, it's actually below one. And so you would think that a new technology sector would have stocks that have high betas. But this one is a little bit unusual that way. And that's why I wanted to start it off. And then I'll show you one that's a little bit higher. Interestingly, though, just for our purposes, just so you see one more holding period return. An annualized holding period return. So we'll do this one real simply, just so you get the hang of it one more time. So the forecast is that the stock will be $91, 91.00 in a year. So we'll divide that by its current price. 1 year prior today, $84.95. And then we're going to subtract the one, as we always do, equals. And then multiply by 100. So the capital gain on this stock is going to be 7.12%. That's not terrible. So just on the stock price appreciation, you'll make 7.12%. Now we add in the dividend yield, which is 2.68%, for a total 1 year, let's try that again, 2.68. And we'll get a look at the total 1 year holding period return, capital gain, and dividend yield together. And you get a respectable 9.8% on a stock that has a relatively low beta, 0.78. It's something to keep in mind. It's one of those, just have a look at it. Now, let me take you on another one here that is one that I am familiar. In full disclosure, I'm not terribly familiar with the green energy sector. It's not really in my wheelhouse, but it's something that I should look more at. But I'm going to look at Brookfield here, Brookfield Partners. And I can't remember its trading symbol, but Brookfield. Partners, yeah. There we go. Now, this is actually a kind of an affordable stock, $27.88 a share. You notice that its beta is exactly one. Okay, so it has, in a well-diversified portfolio, the same volatility as the world portfolio. So let's have a look at what it would do for us over the next 1 year holding period if we started today. So the forecast is that in 1 year, the stock price will be $32.97 divided by the price today, $27.88. And then you subtract the one, and then equals, and then times the result. Whoops, let's try that again. That was a mistake. 32. I'm getting that mouse, it's not clicking out. 32, let me do it this way. 32.97 divided by 2782. 27.88 rather, minus 1 equals, what am I doing wrong here? Let's clear it one more time. Clear. 3297 divided by 2788 minus 1 equals, yeah. Whoa, hello. Times 100. So the capital gain alone on this is going to be 18.325 or 26%. That's decent. Now we add in the dividend. It's got a really generous dividend. That's 5.24 plus 5.24. That's a whopping investment. That's a one-year holding period return of 23.5% for a beta of 1. Yeah.
Isn't it 5.34?
Did I do that wrong? What did I put?
Yes, it's 5.34.
5.34. Okay, so let me back that out. Minus 5.24 plus 5.34. It's still a decent return. Thank you for that. 23.6% for a one-year hold on a stock that has the beta of the market itself. That is, right there, you can see that's a dominant investment. If you're looking at energy, the green energy sector, you would say, okay, what can do as well as this? If you can't find anything else, this would be your go-to, sort of your benchmark for performance in this sector. And, you know, it's something to consider. You want a well-diversified portfolio. Certainly the green energy sector would be part of that, as would consumer products, as would be high technology. You know, you're getting across the board. This would be something that would be very attractive for that well-diversified portfolio. Just buy a share or two of it. And see where it goes. Or if you want to be a little more bolder, buy more than a few shares of it. But that's the last time I'll be showing you the let's look at the numbers. And as I have told you in the past, this is something I'm doing to empower you to think for yourselves and to begin to think about what am I going to do as far as having some control over my future as far as financial stability goes. Look at the stocks yourself. Yeah, you can take advice, listen to advice, but at the same time, now you have tools that will give you the ability to do it somewhat yourself. And if I can do anything for you in a class like this, it's to make you better able to independently assess something that's going to be important to you over your lifetimes. Now, I'm going to have you do that student evaluation. I sent you the link again in your announcements. So go in there and I'll put it up let me do over here. I can probably get it. But I'll have you do that, and then I have to leave while you're doing that, and then we'll come back and we'll do the review. Let's review for the final exam. Now, I'll be a little bit around this, that, and I'll focus on different topics that you should pay attention to. And first things first, you are allowed 2 note cards, 4x6, front and back for the final exam. A lot of people use the first note card as the one from their midterm exam. The final exam is comprehensive. Now, there are approximately 65 questions. There is a matching section, which, of course, you're going to want to, that's sort of multiple questions in one question. So I say about 65 questions. Your best resources, first, your notes are absolutely crucial to it. You need to use printed notes, not on the computer. Print out your notes for the final exam. Typical rules, no cell phones, no sitting in the back row where I can't look at see your screens. And then also, it is 2 hours. It begins at, if I'm not mistaken, Thursday at 7:50 in the morning. Yeah, about that. So, and of course, this is the dead of bad weather, so it will be a fun time for it. But it's 2 hours. That's 120 minutes. And it will, I was trying to think, oh, and the Excel sheets, you can download them from right inside of the exam, the ones you'll need. The math portion of it is a repeat of what you did in quiz 8, the same types of problems in almost the same order. And I'm doing this to make sure that I've got you fully keyed in so that you know how to do each of those. Use your quizzes as a resource. Go back through each one of them. Make sure that you can answer each question accurately, including the numerical questions. Because I even sometimes get lazy and I copy and paste a question from a quiz or the midterm onto the final. You'll see some questions that are very familiar to you. Let me get down to some specifics here for this. Well, I guess I could put the final exam up for you to see, but you wouldn't want me to do that. This is a comprehensive exam. So go back to the beginnings of the course, the origins. In those first days, I set forth foundational concepts. Among them, what are the types of business organizations? You know, the sole proprietorship, the partnership, the corporation. How are they different? And why, what are the reasons a corporation is very different from the others, from the other types? In a course like this, we focus on corporations, although a lot of these principles apply to any company. I talked about stocks and bonds, equity and debt. Okay, what does equity represent? What does debt represent in a corporation? Who owns a corporation? How is it organized in terms of authority? What are the stockholders? What's the board of directors? What is the executive management? Those were questions that I addressed in the first couple of weeks of the semester. And we revisit those now to make sure we have that holy grail of assurance of learning so that I can say, hey, look, they got it by the end. They understand this. This is important. Just to give you a window, a view behind the curtain. In that same regard, just talking lightly, and I'll get back to these subjects a little later. What rights do stockholders have, bondholders? Who has a prior claim? Who has the residual claim to the cash flows of the corporation? Going on from there, I distinguished finance from accounting. They are fundamentally different. They look like they have numbers. Oh, they're both number subjects, but they are fundamentally different. What do we consider a cost that is worthy of our analysis and worthy of us including in an analysis, as opposed to what do accountants see as a cost? What does profit mean to an accountant versus us? Here's a hint. Profit doesn't mean anything to us in finance. It's holy to accounting. It's the thing that everyone talks about, the earnings per share, the earnings. And yet that doesn't really matter in finance because that's not what pays the bills. It's free cash flow. Now, just a broad swath on terminology. Put your notes together so that you have a good list of terms that I have produced in this for you. I've given you words, terms, money versus capital, a bill versus a note versus a bond. common stock versus tracking stock versus restricted stock versus classified stock. All those terms. Fundamental, liquidity. I've emphasized this a number of times, that I set it up so that you can run to the internet and get the a definition, and I've got it right there for you to get it wrong. And ChatGPTs will give you the wrong definition as well. So go and find my definition in your notes. I've repeated it several times. There was even, it's even been on a quiz. What is that liquidity? How is liquidity related to what you expect to get from an asset? If you got a liquid asset and a non-liquid asset, which one do you expect to get you a better return? Concepts like that, those foundations, meat and potatoes things that don't really need numbers, but they have meaning in and of themselves. There will be a matching section on the test, and it will just be terminology. Usually that score is very high, and I like it because it sort of helps with your overall score on the exam. The terminology of lending. What do we call the borrower? Well, the borrower is the issuer, the writer, the seller of the debt. The lender is the investor, the buyer of the debt. I'll test you on that, and I did that on one of the quizzes too. There's very little on this exam that you haven't seen in one way or another on quizzes and the midterm. Of course, there was new material in the second half of the course. Let me go through here a couple of things. Okay, let me get to stocks, but before I do that, risk and return. What is the relationship? In its full-blown, the last definition way I describe the relationship. Passing through bonds, and I will come back a couple of times with bonds. What are the characteristics of a bond? What happens as the time to maturity gets closer? What happens to the price? What happens to the price when the spread between coupon and yield gets larger or gets smaller? What happens to the price of the bond? Now let me hit ratios here for a minute. You can bring your ratio sheet. I almost forgot that. I will not ask you to calculate ratios. However, I will ask you to show me that you understand what ratios mean and relative sizes of ratios. Well, which one of these three ratios is the biggest? Which one's the smallest? Well, what if you see this ratio? What is this telling you? Those kinds of questions. Nothing deeply mathematical. You just have to look at the ratio. Look at the numerator, look at the denominator, and see what those are telling you about this ratio's behavior relative to another one that has similar features to it. Let me hit interest rates here for a minute. Know the decomposition of an interest rate. What is in the risk-free rate? What is in the risk premium? I'll give you, I'll say, okay, I'll describe a bond, and you tell me, okay, which one has the highest of this risk premium? Which one would have the lowest? Now, there's one, I went through it in class, and it's a little bit subtler, but it has to do with when the Federal Reserve adds money to the economy or drains money from the economy. What happens in the short run if, let's say, the Fed adds liquidity to the economy? What does that do to short-term interest rates if the Fed puts money into the economy? On the other hand, what would happen if the Fed withdraws money from the economy in the short run? Now, the long run is the opposite of the short run, but I will focus on just tell me what happens. If the supply of money increases, what happens to short-term interest rates? Or if the supply of money decreases, what happens to short-term interest rates? Let me step over into, one about bonds. I showed you clean versus dirty price. I won't have you calculate a dirty price, but I will ask you something about the relationship between the clean and the dirty price. It's almost obvious if you think about it for just a minute, but I'll ask about it. The relationship between the clean price of a bond and its dirty price. On another subject, financial intermediation. What is it? And what are the three factors that ensure that a financial intermediation will be successful? Again, this is terminology, financial intermediation, and all that, and its details. I'm not going to have you calculate a weighted average cost of capital, but I might ask you something about it. I showed you a chart of weighted average costs of capital for different industries. I may ask you something that I emphasized, I pointed out. There were a couple of things that I pointed out, broad things that you notice in the numbers, and I may ask you about that to ensure that if you were in attendance, you would be more likely to get the right answer than if you were not. Now, on the matter of risk, I almost walked right around it. We decompose risk into pieces. There's total risk, which we represent as the lowercase Greek letter sigma. And then that total risk is broken into two parts, the non-diversifiable, sometimes called systematic risk, and the diversifiable risk, sometimes called non-systematic risk. Make sure you know about those. Now I will ask you a numerical question about CAPM. That's easy. You've got an Excel sheet to do it. But I may ask you for this one and several others, which formula is the right formula for the capital asset pricing model? Which of the following formulas is correct for the market premium over risk-free? I might even do that with the WAC or with free cash flow. I won't have you calculate a free cash flow fully, but I may ask you which of these formulas is correct for the free cash flow. Digging in a little deeper, I may ask you about some detail of free cash flow increases and decreases. Okay, if accounts receivable go up, what does that do to your free cash flow? If inventory goes up, what does that do to your free cash flow? If accounts payable go up, what does that do to your free cash flow? Well, the first two, those are current assets, receivables and inventory. So those, when they go up, that drains free cash flow. It's, in other words, there is a current asset that is absorbing free cash flow. But if the last one goes up, accounts payable, well, that's a liability going up. You're not paying a bill that you were supposed to, so that frees up cash for other things. So your free cash flow goes up in that case. I will probe that with you on the final exam. Okay. I spent a little of that lecture on ethics, so I will ask something pretty basic about it, about the different models of ethical action, guidance, as it were. Just make sure you got some relatively brief notes about that and agency. Agency, I won't dig too deeply, but I could certainly ask you something about agency. And you've got that PowerPoint presentation for that. Cost of capital. Now, I won't have you directly calculate a cost of capital, but I would certainly expect you to know what is the most expensive capital you can get, a company can gather. What's the cheapest that a company can gather? Other just terms, I've talked about such terms as intrinsic value, which is what we're seeking when we do those formulas for the price of stock. How is that market value? Are we trying to find out what the price of the stock is going to be tomorrow, or is it not? I'm just trying to be as thorough as I can. Again, this is not exhaustive, but I'm trying to make it quite comprehensive. Make sure you understand what I'm talking about, what I mean by internal rate of return. What is that? And how is that related to net present value of a project? I might even ask you something kind of straightforward, like about break even, in the sense, okay, what happens as your unit margin gets smaller? What happens to your break even point? Look at the formula. It's pretty obvious what happens if P minus V gets smaller. What happens if I jack up my price to get myself some distance between the retail and wholesale cost? What does that do to my break-even point? But in terms of, I strongly encourage you to get a good list of the terms I've used in the course. The matching section is fairly easy if you have a good handle on the terms that I really emphasized or I spent time explaining. You should do well on that matching part, and that's some good points. You add those to doing well on the numerical questions, and you're on your, and then the more or less the easier questions, word questions, you should be in good shape going into this. Typically, the final exam on a good day is pushing around. It's coming up close to 80%. And that's the whole thing is you're going to see questions. You're familiar with them. I've hit you with them on quizzes and midterm. And also, I've emphasized them in classes. So it's basically a matter of organizing your notes. That's your first thing is your notes. And then go to those podcasts. You'll see the titles, and you can listen to a lecture or a part of a lecture again. And catch something that you missed if you feel like you're weak in it. The third place you go is the PowerPoint presentations. Now, those are prepared by the publisher. However, I have gone in and tweaked some of them with a little extra from my lectures. So they are a resource for you as well. Now, tomorrow I will be in my office. Our teaching assistant will be in her office during her office hour. And then I will also be there, too, for at least part of the day. Friday, I will be there as well, and then at least in the morning. And then on next week, I should be in my office. I'll keep my regular office hours next week so that you can come in during those and ask some last-minute questions, too. Now it's your turn. Ask me questions if you have any right now. Yeah.
So out of the 65 questions, approximately how many of them are going to be spreadsheet-based?
I can tell you right now, it's the exact same number as on the quiz. Give me a second and I can count them up for you. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. And so obviously that is a good swath of points. And if you do it right, none of them should take you more than about a minute. Just be careful. And a couple of things to bitch at you about. That salvage value adds to your last year's free cash flow. Don't do it wrong. And on the bond yield, there's one below the bond yield that's coupon yield. That, make sure you don't put that one down. That's just a side calculation for you on the bond price and yield problems. I'm trying to think if there was anything else I noticed that was kind of a persistent problem. Not really. Just take your time, get the numbers in accurately, and transfer them accurately to the answer to the Canvas. What else do you have for me? Any questions? Okay, if that's all you have, that's all I have for you today. I thank you.